We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network. This is Milwaukee Bucks Game 2 win over the Atlanta Hawks post-game crossover podcast, Eurostep / win in 6. I am Ty Windisch, back in the building, aka my home, not the building, aka Five Serve Forum. Can't go back there again this postseason, unfortunately. I am joined by Rohan Kadi of the Eurostep Podcast, Adam McGee of the Win in 6 Podcast, everyone of the Eurostep Podcast Network. Fellas, as the Bucks run out this big win over the Hawks, currently up 35 points with about 2.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, how's it going?
It's going good.
Yeah, couldn't be better, honestly. Like, I mean, I think I was more elated after the Game 7 win, but this feels pretty good. Just a solid playoff beatdown in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, how can you not feel good while watching this game?
I think I feel extra good because this is exactly what the Bucks needed after Game 1, right? Like, the one thing, you obviously losing is what you really couldn't do. I think this was as close to a must win as you can have in any like non-Game 7 or closeout game situation, but what you really wanted to do, what we really wanted to see from the Bucks, was a dominant win, right? Like, you don't just want to even up the series. You don't want to eke out a win in similar fashion to Game 1 if the Bucks had won instead of lost. You want the Bucks to go out there and prove that they were the favorite coming in for a reason. And even after Game 1, they were the favorite on most odd makers for a reason. They're the better team. They have the best player. They're able to dominate this Atlanta Hawks defense, especially. And they dominated Atlanta's offense too. We'll get into that. But I think it started with Giannis and the Bucks going inside, slicing up this Hawks defense the way I think we expected to see from the jump. And after a little bit of a sloppy-ish first quarter, Milwaukee just went off in the second quarter. We saw the disciplined Bucks, and they pretty much put Atlanta away in one quarter. Adam, what were your thoughts this game, the meaningful three quarters of this game anyway, on what it means for the series and what kind of an answer it was to Game 1?
I enjoyed, true to sloppiness, that there was some hot shooting. The Bucks didn't take full advantage of that, but this is a little window into if the Bucks just get a little bit of luck, if they get a good shooting night. The game could be over in a hurry, and guys, like, let me look to the box score here. Like, Thanasis is in 10 minutes, not seconds, minutes. Jordan War has got 9. Elijah Bryant's got 8. Jeff Teague's got 8, and we're not going to complain about them. There could be a lot more of that for the Bucks. If they can just find some shooting every now and then, that's one part of it. That's always been the uncontrollable, though. As for what is within the Bucks' control, I just really like the aggression. I think the two players in particular I'm going to find myself talking about a lot are Giannis. I thought this was a pretty special game, with the minutes he ended up playing not being all that high at all. It's one that may get lost to the history books, but he's rarely been as impressive and as forceful as he was in this game. And the other player is Brook. And this is, to me, by far and away, the biggest development to come out of this game. Is not only did, you know, Brook stay on the floor, were able to keep him on the floor, he proved that he's completely invaluable. You know, they cannot be without Brook Lopez. They cannot be without him. He's too good. He's too good on both sides. This is something you and I talked about quite a bit, Rohan, on the post game one episode. I felt that, you know, as much as there was success with them going small and switching everything, Bud kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, right? You know, they needed. Rohan, you're making a face. Is that not a saying?
I've never heard that in my life. So that threw me off.
It's over here.
I was wondering, had that not made the trip across the Atlantic? But Ty just didn't even flinch. Oh, yeah. And if you're not flinching about babies being thrown out with the bathwater, then, you know.
Then you don't love Bucks basketball.
It's definitely made the trip. But for Brook, it was a case of, you know, they just can't get away from it. They don't have the players. And I do think, although it worked out in this game, there was signs of, you know, they don't have the players. There were guys who played minutes, had some good moments, but I don't know if you're like, oh yeah, over seven games, that's going to hold up. With Brook, he thrived, you know? That possession where he locked down Trey, was that the first possession? The 24-second violation?
Of the Jack second Bauer half.
To start the second half?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's really kind of just bringing it up to another level. So that is a big deal, and that's maybe the standout for me.
Rohan, I'll give you the pick, and I want to hear your thoughts on everything, but I feel like the two big takeaways there were Giannis's amazing game and the alterations to how Brook Lopez played. And if you want to go somewhere else, we can wait on both of those things, but I want to hear your thoughts on whichever of those you're most amped to talk about as well.
Well, let's go Giannis first so we don't forget about it.
I was about to say, are we allowed to go Giannis first?
See, this is what we need to do more often. We just need to do it right away so that I can't forget. I'll take the blame on this one. I am usually the one that forgets. So let's talk Giannis. Let's talk about the two-time MVP who managed to just completely dominate this game. He did take some threes. He was 0-3 from three tonight.
I want to say, though,
the game was over.
One before the game was over? I think one. Just only one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you guys for providing context. They did not matter because he had already established himself as the most dominant interior force in the league. And he has been doing that for a long time. And he's just proving it again on the stage of the Eastern Conference Finals. There's absolutely nothing. Adam, you and I talked about this on the Post Game 1 pod. There's absolutely nothing Atlanta can do. Giannis knows that. The Bucks know that. They went out there and they showed that tonight. Giannis was doing everything he could possibly do to get to the restricted area, get to the paint. He was coming off of screens. He was coming off of his own handle. He was just doing everything he could possibly do to get into that restricted area, into that painted area. And once he gets there, he showed that, again, he's one of the best finishers in the entire NBA, if not the best. It's a performance where it's like, oh, he puts up 25 points in 29 minutes. He took 18 shots. Sure. Whatever. Like, we're used to that with Giannis at this point, realistically, if we're being serious. Like, that's a normal Giannis performance. But this was not a normal Giannis performance in that the context is so much different. We saw a game where he did play really well for his own standards, but he wasn't being a dominant force in game one. Like, given he was showing that he can go get his own, he was showing that, oh, I can do this. He wasn't doing that in the context of the team. The team wasn't doing anything in the context of him. They blended those two in his scant minutes tonight, and they blew the Hawks out of the water. And it starts with Giannis. It ends with Giannis. It always does for this team. And that was on full display tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the first four points of the game were Giannis just getting to the rack. And I think it was kind of one of those moments for me that really it's like, oh, we're watching a legit superstar play right now, because he came out of the gates. There's games where Giannis will a little wishy-washy, attack when he wants to, distribute the ball more, get the whole team involved. To me, I felt very early in this game that Giannis was coming out and he was saying, like, we're not losing this. No matter what, we're not losing this. Like, I'll pull a Trey and put up 48 points on all the shots if I have to. we're not losing this game. We're not losing both at Fiserv in the Eastern Conference Finals. And it just felt different to me. And of course, his teammates did step up a lot more. Like you said, Adam, the threes falling in the first quarter, I think, gave the Bucks a lead that I felt a little shaky about until the defensive intensity picked up in the second quarter, which, again, super nice to see. It was like, hey, this is a team that is good enough to just like be winning by double digits, even if they're not playing all that well if the threes fall. But Giannis himself was like, you could feel that energy off of him. Just like, we're not losing this game. I'm going to do whatever it takes. It didn't end up being that dire, but I just love the way he started the game, just getting to the rack over and over and over. And I want to quickly share the Shaq quote from halftime. I know the Inside the NBA folks on TNT often derided. They do say a lot of questionable things. I did think this was a cool quote. Shaq, he can do this all the time. You're disrespecting him by not doubling or tripling him. So, hey, use your size, use your ability. Shaq loved that Giannis wasn't taking a lot of jumpers in that first half. And I think that's the beauty of this Bucks team now, although they haven't made threes a lot of this postseason. If you are doubling and tripling Giannis, there's a lot of players who can hurt you around him right now. And I think that's the beauty. And also, I just think it's harder to build a wall than Reggie Miller seems to think. Or barrier. Sorry, Rohan, barrier. You can't do it with bad defenders. It just won't work. But yeah, I thought it was a tremendous Giannis game. And Adam, I saw you were ready to weigh in before I jumped in. I had to get the Shaq quote out. I was happy with that Shaq quote.
Well, one of the things that just when you talk about the way he came out, I think there's a real element of tone setting. And if you're going to talk about what the Bucks needed to do and how they need to adjust, he, as the team's leader, as the team's best player, he had to come and do that. And in game one, I think he came out, he was playing well, he was making good plays, but it was like 4.5 minutes before he took a shot. He was just out passing, 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 which, great, you know, that's something that, particularly when compared to some of the questionable shots that he can throw up, I don't think anyone's going to have a problem with him making really kind of precise passes to his teammates. But the Bucks needed him to go and really kind of throw a gauntlet down and not let the Hawks kind of settle in and get complacent with that. Shaq's quote is good. My one thing is he can't do this every game, and that's not a problem really, because no player in the history of the NBA has been able to do this every game. Like, what's really interesting to me, okay, there's like that all-time finish, one of the very best finishes of his career, the mid-air adjustment and just the softest
NBA history.
Yeah, for sure. But I just felt like, and this is very pleasantly surprising, he looked ultra explosive tonight. Like, there was like pop out of those spins. You know, he was really kind of bursting away from Hawks defenders. He was getting separation in a way that, you know, it doesn't feel like he always gets. All of this is relative because obviously Giannis is a freak athlete. But there was something just that little bit extra there. Not just that he was kind of a step quicker than the Hawks defenders, but that he was just basically, I thought it was a true sheer force of will, but he was bursting through them. You know, how many times did we essentially see him split two defenders with a spin and he's just through the other side and it's an easy finish? That was really, really nice to see because we're at the conference finals. Like, he's got a ton of games under his belt. We're used to the question, and I know it might have been on the Win in Six mailbag, like Jordan and I feel the question about it. It's like, could he be hurt? His knee's bleeding at the end of every game. You know, the gassing out and he's hobbled, which, you know, all of that to me is just kind of the Giannis experience. His knee is always hurt. He's generally exhausted. But to find something like that in a game where it's like, you know, your team can't lose it, to come out and play like that and to show that kind of athleticism, that kind of explosiveness, bodes really, really well for the Bucks.
Yeah, and I think that's the other part about how nice it is that Milwaukee had that great second quarter, kept up the intensity through the third, got a little lackadaisical, some early shot clock threes there in the third that some people were maybe taking a bit too seriously, especially Giannis's, but
shooting practice.
Finished the quarter strong, though. Literally the whole fourth quarter was garbage time. And that's, and when you're at this point in the playoffs,
the entire second half was garbage time.
But Giannis is on the court. The fourth quarter, nobody important is on the court. Sorry, Bobby Portis, but nobody important is on the court.
Listen, you didn't misspeak.
I didn't say I didn't.
We're gonna get there.
Yeah. I'm not entirely.
We're gonna get there. We're gonna get there.
But 29 minutes for Giannis in a blowout win. Like, now that the games are every other day and the finals, I don't want to get ahead of myself either way, but could certainly be the early start, even if both teams – it will be if both teams wrap up early. And again, there's a lot of series left in both sides of the bracket right now, but there's not that many off days anymore. Every other day throughout the Eastern Conference Finals, the finals, I think that's 1 or 2 days off. When you can buy Giannis, who does always have achy knees and achy everything with the way he plays, some extra rest, I think it's always a good thing. I want to talk about the defensive adjustment on Trae Young because it was huge. Like you mentioned, Adam, and this is something I was saying too, is like you can't just not play Brook. It's untenable. And there was a lot of, you know, maybe you play him like a role player. Some people going as far to say maybe you just don't play him. It's just not possible. They don't have the roster for that. He's way too good. The other players are way not good enough. But they had to adjust. So I want to take one win and one loss on what I thought the Bucks had to do defensively. The win is bring Brook up a little bit more on the drop, and they did that often. The loss is I didn't want help. I really wanted it just to be a two-man action on both ends. But the help that Milwaukee was sending to Trae Young really seemed to affect him. I think the Bucks did it very well in a way that didn't give up open shots as much. And Trae was flustered. I mean, Trae, after putting up 48 in game one, had 15 points on 6-for-16 shooting, 1-for-8 from three. 3 assists in 28 minutes. The most crucial number, though, 3 free throw attempts. And I thought the Bucks were great about helping, about being as physical as possible without ever giving him the opportunity to sell contact. That's how you have to play against this guy. I mean, whether you're dropping, sending help, not sending help, I think the main takeaway is like make him hit shots. And especially if it's not floaters, make him hit jumpers. He's not been a good three-point shooter this postseason. That certainly applies to long twos as well. I thought the Bucks were really good about getting him, making him go through multiple bodies in traffic and then making him shoot jumpers, which is just really not his strong suit as a player.
Yeah, I thought the defense especially was like, I went on a thing about how Giannis, it starts and ends with Giannis, but also like their defensive adjustment was just monumental. It was light night and day from what it was in game one. Just right out of the gate, they come out switching 1 through 4 immediately. They didn't wait to go to a switch everything lineup. They went straight to a 1 through 4 on ball and off ball, which was great to see right away. And like you mentioned, Ty, they were bringing Brook Lopez higher on the drop, which they should have done in game one, but game one is behind us and they're doing it now. So whatever. That's all it really needs to be, realistically. And you mentioned the help defense. It wasn't the normal Bucks help defense either. It wasn't just like, okay, come off of the strong side corner where you're one pass away.
Come from the easiest pass away and do it very slowly was like the Bucks 2019-2020
help defense. They're helping from the weak side and also rotating after the help in order to cover the passing lanes and also making sure they jump the initial passing lanes so that they can't get Milwaukee into rotation right away, which just frazzled Trae Young, frazzled him. He didn't know what to do as a playmaker. His shot wasn't falling. And
his state
every time
of being matched his hair.
Wow.
Had to do it.
He was full lollipop on that one. He couldn't make his easy passes. He couldn't make his first reads. And once he started to get into his second and third reads, it was already too late because he was being swarmed. The Bucks played impeccable is a strong word, and I wouldn't use it, but as close to impeccable defense against the Atlanta Hawks as you could do in this game. I thought it was really well done, really well planned out, and really well executed.
I mean, the Bucks were faking him out with their help. Like, that's the thing particularly PJ was doing. Like, it's just, you're just flashing help. It's like, oh, I'm coming to help. And before, like, you're just, you could see Trae Young's brain get scrambled. And like, I can't remember who else. There's someone who'd done it a couple of times. Might have been Chris at one point. But it's once he'd see, like, they could bail on the help and just get back to. It's basically just faking. It's like kind of watching Brook cleanse himself so he's not being called for for violations. That's essentially what the Bucks were doing with their help defense in this game, and it was working. It was getting in his head. I mean, I don't know how either of you feel about this. I think the Hawks came in like losers tonight. It was pretty embarrassing. It started pregame, which what I now would feel like they must regret, which is making such a big deal out of Giannis's free throws.
Because Giannis responds by shooting way faster and at a much higher clip, which is
but the you know what? That's that part of it is irrelevant. You've won game one. You've won game one in spite of anything. Like, you've seen how he's been shooting regardless of if he's taking longer. Is he really killing anyone with his free throws? No. So how about you just go and win game two? Just go and win game two. I mean, you can get on the league's case, but you don't need that to come out in any way where it's becoming the story, where you're then talking about a pregame, where Bud's having to answer questions. Like, they were looking for the cheap way to victory in this game. And it was just in everything. It's the constant take fouls, which are just like, yeah, it's just quitting. It's just like,
and I've heard they did this a lot against Philly too. I almost get it because they're just not a defense. In the words of Steve Nash, the all-time words, we're just not a defensively inclined roster. It is true. I think there is an idea to it, but also I don't think it's just like, I don't think it's a good vibe. I think it's a bad vibe for your basketball team if you're like, we do a turnover, no way we're going to play any defense right after that. We're just going to give up.
Well, they literally can't stop Milwaukee or Philly for that matter. And if you can't stop Philly, you definitely can't stop Milwaukee in transition.
Yeah, this is not the Knicks or like the rotting corpse of the Sixers anymore. Like, this game had that energy for sure.
Well, I mean, I remember going in our Eurostep postgame pod. It was like the one dynamic guard Seth Curry went off too. But the one dynamic point guard they played with was Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose put up incredible numbers against this team, this Hawks team that cannot guard guards, basically. I think it's not a coincidence that Jrue Holiday's had two great back-to-back games. Like, there's no resistance. There's literally no resistance. They put Bogdan on him, who cannot move, which still is kind of wild to me, but the other options are Kevin Huerter and Trae Young, so I don't think there's a lot there. They have no answers to most things that the Bucks do on offense, which is what we expected going in. We're seeing it a lot more now, but I do think the Bucks' defense is feeding into the offense a lot.
But just play the game. Like, imagine if the shoe was on the other foot here and we watched the Bucks lose in that fashion. Oh, but I mean, the other example, not that this is anything new, this is part of what he does, but the foul that Trey got for jumping backwards into Chris and not
even
making
touch him.
It's like you're just not even playing the game. You're not actively going out and being like, oh, how about I make this shot? Or how about we get back and try to play some defense? We may be terrible at it, but how about we try? Or how about we just, you know, we put up with some calls are going to go against, some calls are going to go whatever. We're not making. I just thought their whole attitude, their energy was wrong to bring into the game. And then they get bludgeoned. They get humiliated. Like, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens when it goes to Atlanta. Maybe they can just get back to where they were, you know, 48 hours ago. Maybe they can just pick right up, forget this happened, the world's shortest memory. But this was bad. And from our point of view, great. You know, Bucks fans should feel great about it. Bucks players will certainly feel great about it. But it was just a really weird kind of vibe to bring into a game. It's honestly like a team that looks like, and in fact hasn't been here before.
One quick thing I want to add, I know you've got something, Rohan, on just the Bucks stunting the help. Actually, two quick things. One, Adam, I loved your point from the game one pod of like, even if he's not an ideal matchup for Trae Young, Trae Young is not enthused about playing offense against PJ Tucker. Like, you can see it. He doesn't want that. So especially when it's PJ stunting help, it's been effective. And you've mentioned Brook Lopez's cleansing as an analogy to the stunting help. The other way Brook Lopez is involved is if you buy that split second of a pause with Atlanta, Brook Lopez can get back into position. And if Brook Lopez is between Trae Young and the rim / Capella, there's nothing there inside anymore. Like, Trey is way too tiny to shoot over Brook Lopez if he's right there. And I think we saw that, like, Brook was in better spots to contest in game two. And suddenly the Hawks had literally nothing inside. Like, Capella 1-for-5, 2 points. Trae Young 6-for-16, 15 points. Like, Brook Lopez, if he's in position, still an all defensive caliber. I think, was it this year? Did he make all defense this year? Or was it last year? Was it just Jrue and Giannis this year?
I don't think he made it last year.
I don't think he made it. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't have a good regular season. He didn't really.
I think second team the year before last is what it was.
I thought last year he made it. Rohan's pulling it up, but still,
his first year in Milwaukee. But anyway, continue.
The point is, if he's in position, like he's still very imposing, and I think. I love that they're letting him go out on the perimeter more. I don't think he's terrible out there. I mean, you mentioned the shot clock violation. I think part of the reason he looks good out there is they really don't ask him to do it often, which is smart. I think if you get Brook Lopez running around the perimeter for 40 minutes, he's probably going to look pretty bad by the end of the game. But when he's out there from time to time, I think he does quite well. And his whole thing is...
He's smart, Ty. He makes you shoot over him.
He makes you try to shoot over him, which is hard to do.
He was second team last year.
Thank you.
I can't believe I missed that.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm sure you didn't miss it at the time. Just, you know, a lot's happened since.
Yeah, it's been a busy time for us.
You know, the world's been a weird place and everything.
Three guys on all defense last year.
Yeah.
Wild.
Where were you? I know there's a lot that we just kind of parked about last season with how it ended. But, I mean, the thing with Brook is his intelligence allows him to basically just survey what's in front of him. And if there's an opportunity to kind of even half trap someone like Trae Young, he can take it. You know, if he's near the corner, if he's along the baseline, if he's along the sideline, you know, Trae Young is so small, Brook can just come and basically envelop him. You know, just spread your arms out and all Trae Young sees is darkness. And
maybe not darkness with Brook.
Well, oh, yeah. There's a couple of instances. Wow. A couple of instances of that in the game. And I think they can go to it more. They should feel confident and free in that. And yeah. I think based on this event, there's now no reason for them not to feel that way.
I take your victory lap.
Which one?
Wow.
Deceptively long.
Was it? I think it was second quarter. It was like the Bucks help defense like went in to the paint to stop a drive, and then the ball gets kicked out and back around. Might have been Herder up around the wing behind three, and it was Brook who ran out there to pick him up there. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's different. Like, there's games, especially in the regular season, a.k.a. the way they approached game one against Atlanta, where, like, he would have just stayed parked around the paint and been like, well, somebody else should get out there. Like, I'm not going to give up our whole defense. This was more of an all-hands-on-deck approach on defense, and it worked. Again, like, If he's out there in spurts, I don't have any issue with it. Like, he's so smart on defense. He's so crafty. He'll trick you to shoot over him. And then, yeah, deceptively long. Good luck. My hot take on the Hawks shooting is really, it's one player, really. I go under on Trey and let him shoot threes all day. I'm not worried.
Sure.
In this playoffs, I think now 10 times he's shot 33.3% or less from three to four times where he's shot more than that. And it's like, play the numbers. Like, make him – and I think, yeah, it's not – this is – people are going to say, like, oh, analytics, like, you can't do that, math nerd, blah, blah, blah. Part of it is the analytics. Part of it is also, like, if the Hawks' offense devolves into a bad shooter shooting a bunch of threes, that's just not good for your team. Like, unless you're literally a Steph Curry-level shooter, it's not good for your team if you're just taking pull-up three after pull-up three after pull-up three. Like, I think it kills the offense a little bit. I think Atlanta was dangerous because they had more players involved in game one. And the way he Trey was 4-for-13 or 4-for-11 in game one, 1-for-8 in this game. Like, I'm switching against him. I'm going under on screens and I'm switching bigs and I'm saying, hey, don't let him drive. Like, give him some space, make him shoot over you. Don't let him drive. I thought the one make was over Portis and I felt bad. I thought he actually played it perfectly. Like, didn't give him the space to drive, made him shoot over his outstretched arms and he makes it. Cool. 1-for-7. You can always live with 1-for-7.
Herter got one over over Portis as well. Herter is the guy, particularly when bigs get out there. I just don't want any piece of that. He is the real shooter. Like, the thing with Trey is, and Trey, he did only have one three. He had another that I was convinced, and not just like in a Marv Albert kind of way, that was a three in real time. And it obviously was a toe on the line, which, you know, continued, you know, toes on the line. We'll take as many of them as we can get. For opposing players over the next few weeks. But that's his range. Like, he is a dead eye from, you know, right at the three-point line. I think that's something that if he was always in that position, you would be more wary of it. The fact is, he loves to take shots from 5-6 further feet behind the arc, and he's not a good three-point shooter from that range. It might be something to do with the fact that he has like tiny little arms.
I mean, just tall. Listen, the math checks out. Small arms, hard to shoot.
I did think about it during the game. I was like, you know, you're a little guy. You just get a little bit closer.
I also think that's why it's good if you can make him work more in the paint and not let him get bailed out with those free throws. Like, make him exert as much energy as possible. Like, I think the smaller you are, the more tired you get over the course of a game. Like, and people make the Steph comparison all the time. Trey looks tiny compared to Steph. Like, a lot of reasons they're different players, for sure. Trey's a better passer. Steph is miles ahead as an offensive player and much less of a foul baiter.
And defensive player.
Also true. People forget Steph led the league in steals once or twice. But the size is massively different, like massively. Like, Trey is so small. Like,
anytime he's jacked now. Like, my goodness,
He's had a lot of time to sit on the couch and hit some workouts in between that. But
he's getting ready for his trip to Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's got to come to Milwaukee if he wants another deep playoff run. But yeah, Trey is tiny. And I think he looked tiny in this game in a couple different senses, and that's what the Bucks need to do: weaponize the size, make Trey fight Brook Lopez on more of Brook Lopez's terms.
Have we got weaponized the size t-shirts yet?
I think we might have to make weaponized the size.
They'd sell.
I'm not wearing that.
We might have to picture Adam. Adam loves the big guys. Maybe Adam will be pictured on it.
Well, now it's going. This is like Rowan's tweets the other night. This is getting
I didn't post the tweet, but I have to. You sent me the screenshot of your lone appearance in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
It's just a quote. I don't know what you're talking about. It's just a quote.
Guys.
It was my very early basketball expertise. Rowan might not be in on every part of this conversation, but, and you know, most people listening probably aren't at all, which is not, does not serve well for, you know, the context that would make this better. But I think we should just move on now. No one's bailing me out here and moving the conversation along like a good host would do.
Do you want to have your Portis conversation?
That's what I was going to say. Let's talk about Portis.
So I wasn't against, go ahead, Adam. I wasn't anti-Portis in this game.
Classic cult heroes game.
For sure.
That's all he is. That's all he is. People need to know, but it means
Nick Collison is a cult hero.
Well, yeah, and Bobby Portis is. Okay, I mean,
no, don't compare to Nick Collison.
No, Rohan decided to take it that far, and I'm not going to back
down.
When
you say cult hero, that's what I think of. In terms of
Dellavedova, on the Cavs.
Delly's got some cult, although Delly was Delly on the Cavs is better and more reliable.
No.
Yeah, honestly, there's a lot of Portis. Portis first quarter and a half. You talk about the part of the game where you weren't feeling great about the Bucks. Portis and Forbes were train wrecks. And then he had a couple of good plays. He brought the energy in. And he was like a man possessed for the rest of that quarter. And he was really good. And the crowd are chanting his name. And everyone's forgotten everything else. And from this point on, for the rest of the series, we're going to get questions all the time. Like, why are they playing Portis more? Why aren't they playing Portis? And the reason is because he's not that good. Like, he's just not very good.
He's a fine, he's a bench player. You can't expect him to be consistently good across. If he was consistently good across all his minutes with that skill set, he wouldn't be coming off the bench in the first place.
For sure, but he's a bench player. But is he a bench player that, let's say they're in the finals and they're playing the Phoenix Suns, is he a bench player you're going to want to see the floor? No, he's not.
I would make him be played off first.
Oh, and that will happen. That could happen, in this series again. I mean, it happened against the Nets. I don't have anything against... I love the Bobby Portis moments. I think that's... We talked about this on multiple episodes. I know you and I talked about it in regard to him and Thanasis on the last episode, Rohan. Yeah, the Bucks need the energy. They need the energy. So that is a win. They need someone that the fans will get behind, who will get the fans into the game, because God knows in game one that was needed and it was never really delivered.
Good job, Ty.
Yeah, let's...
I didn't have a voice all of yesterday. I was yelling. I was asked to sit down.
Guessing you didn't have a voice at the game either, right?
Stupid towel the whole game. I'm not a big fan of the towel thing, but I waved the towel. I don't know. I'm taking the L for being there, but I'm not taking the L for not being energetic enough. I was yelling out substitution ideas to Bud. Like, I was there.
I'm sure everyone appreciated that.
I was anti-Teague after 2 minutes.
Please tell me there's video of this.
No, there's not. Shout out to my guy Coolin, who got me the ticket. I had to give Coolin a shout out. But neither of us were taking video. We were too locked in.
This is how influencers get tickets. So, you know, they shout out them on the podcast. It's like
too many people around us were on their phones too often. I sent like 4 tweets during the whole game. Like, locked in.
And wow, how did you stay so disciplined?
The tweets came during TV timeouts. Like, I was lasered in.
Sacrifice your brand to support your team? How was that? How did they come about?
It wasn't easy. I'll do a 5-part podcast series on that arduous journey during the the off season. But
can we get back to Bobby?
Yeah,
I know that we're beginning this from very different opinions on Bobby Portis.
We're that far off, honestly.
We're not as far off as we once were. And I'm not taking victory laps for that, but you know, sure.
To where I was than where you were.
Yeah, Maybe we're not as close as we thought.
No, we're not close at all. We're not close at all. If the past few weeks haven't brought you closer to where I was, well, you know.
I'm saying before the season started. You wouldn't have had Portis playing at all by this point in the postseason.
I wouldn't have him playing now. I mean, there aren't many guys that are playing. There'd be probably 6 guys on the court right now, which is what we saw against the Nets. But like the minutes are loose when he gets out there. And you could lose another game in the series because of that. And I think they're going to keep doing it. You know, just because you can somewhat get away with Forbes and Portis in this series, I don't know if it's reason to do it, particularly if Bryn Forbes is not giving you anything. But Bobby, I'm not seeing enough generally on the glass. I mean, that was a great performative defensive rebound where he nearly burst the ball.
That was
and he got
incredible.
Everyone fired up. I enjoy that.
Uncontested rebound that he just swallowed out of the air.
But this is my point that I don't think people are going to get the right ideas. All of that is great and all of that has a positive impact. But I don't know what part of Portis, like what's the trade-off between, you know, something that's just kind of giving the Bucks a little bit more energy, just kind of a little bit more juice, as opposed to what we're very comfortable with is, oh, you know, Bobby looks good and Bobby's holding his own out there. Now he's having a burst where he kind of gets fired up. He gets some momentum. Things go his way, which I feel is the impact. There's nothing wrong with that, but you've got to pull the plug quick. And there are nights where that's just going to be off. And I'm not crazy about how they will be. Like for everything that was good about this performance, you look down the bench and outside of Pat being 3-3 from deep, it's not going to happen every night. It's not a pretty picture.
I will say, I do think that a little bit of the drawback, and like, you're right, they were getting toasted a bit on the defensive end when he was out there, especially in that second quarter. I would say a lot, like maybe not most of it. I mean, there is still some onus on Bobby there, but like, you're also playing Bobby Portis, Bryn Forbes, and Pat Connaughton all at the same time. Like, mm-hmm. Something's got to break there. Something's got to break.
And they weren't helped by Chris getting in foul trouble, which is why, again, you end up with like three of those guys. Because I do think Drew and Giannis were the other two players on the floor, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
So it's really that Chris is in foul trouble when they go to that. That's completely fair. I'll take that point.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I think Portis is a lot more playable than Forbes at this point. I think
I agree with that too.
Portis is not without any merit defensively. I think, A, whenever they have him drop, that's when you get there. He can't drop. But if you're going to have him trap or switch, ideally, I think he's playable. And he's going to force some takeaways. He had, I think, a steal and a block in this game. And I know box score stats, blah, blah, blah. That's you take away a possession from the other team and you get a fast break possession. Like, that stuff matters. And I think that's going back to what I mentioned. Steph was leading the league in steals 1 year. Like, you can account for getting picked on some possessions if you can come back and force a takeaway in another one. It's a big swing. So if he's able to force some, if he's able to pull out a few good defensive plays and work the paint like he does on offense, and especially feels like his jumper's been a little wishy-washy in the postseason, I think he's responded by taking less of those 18-footers and just getting in the paint more. And he's been the recipient of some really nice passes from the Bucks and capitalizing in there. I think 15 to 18 or 20 minutes, 20 is probably a lot, 15 to 18 minutes of that, especially earlier in series, I think there's a lot of upside. And I think especially it's nice because you can get a few less minutes for your Giannis's and Tucker's and Lopez's. Maybe they can play a few more minutes and feel a little less worn out by the game seven, where only six guys are playing. I'm not saying Porter should play 18 minutes in a game seven, but I do think in this earlier part of a series when the rotations haven't tightened down that far yet, because players would like literally be killing over on the court if you had a 6-minute
rotation for sure,
a whole postseason, there's a lot of value there. So I thought he had a great game tonight. I thought it was exactly what you need from Portis. The fact that he got a technical and then the free throw was missed, it really shows you that everything was going Portis'
ball
way
don't
in this
lie.
Game. Ball does not lie. But I think this is the blueprint for a good Portis game. It's like, get in the paint, score, clean up a little bit. I agree, his rebounding hasn't been exactly that I would hope for, but I think he's compensated for it by having some impact plays defensively, a block here, a steal there. Just energy is the big word with him that can make up for some of the defensive lapses. And also, he just looked better on defense in general when they weren't dropping him. You just can't drop him. He just can't drop him.
No, because they changed the way they used him defensively.
They trapped, like, switched a lot more.
Not even just that. They changed the personnel around him.
Yeah, like, was he playing at the four more?
He was playing at the four a lot more. There was one of Brooke or Giannis with him for the majority, if not all of his minutes. I don't know exactly. But that's ideally what it is. We talked last game, Adam, about how not only was Brooke not showing higher, he was dropping back. And if Brooke dropping back is bad, Bobby dropping back that terrible. Deep is just, it's awful. You cannot do any worse. However, if you have another big guy out there like Brooke or Giannis who can sort of clean up defensive mistakes, and also they're switching 1-4 immediately, even if Brooke is on the court. And if Giannis is on the court, they're just switching everything. So you don't have to worry about that with Bobby anymore. You don't have to worry about him being the big that's picked on. because he's playing up a little bit more, given one thing Atlanta could do to adjust for that is change who guards who and stuff like that. But like, so can Milwaukee. They can play those mismatches too with Bobby and make sure they hide him on someone else that they don't want setting screens for Trae Young. And if they do, that's a win for Milwaukee in that sense, because even though you can get the switch onto Trae or whoever, or Kevin Huerter with Bobby, you're still getting a negative action from Atlanta in that situation. So I thought they did a great job modifying his role so that he can fit a little bit better. I don't think it'll hold up. I still think he's going to get maybe squeezed out of the rotation if this series goes long, which it probably won't based on what we saw tonight. I don't know. I think it's fine. I think it's fine.
It's just flying too close to the sun at all times, every moment he's in the game. It is, sure, as a collective experience.
But what's
every little...
What else? The alternative isn't...
No, my issue is that, you know, you're not wrong, and I myself advocated for this before the series. You've got to use this series. You have to have a look at these guys first of all, just in terms of you need bodies. You need to buy some minutes of rest here and there for the rest of your team. My concern is this is the conference finals. This is not still like the long build up to something, and let's say, and let's hope they do get beyond this. There isn't the margin for error. There isn't the time, the room for experimentation. And I can see the Bucks getting burned badly on Bobby Portis by just collectively everyone buying into it and feeling. And look, we know what Bud is like. We know what the coaching staff can be like. This is something where if they just feel like they're getting away with it in this series, oh, maybe we can get away with it in the next series, and then you don't, and it costs you in a big way very quickly. And it, you know, all it might have to cost you is one game. That could be true in this series as well. It might just have to cost you a run at the wrong time. But the minutes to me are just generally unsteady. I know he's much better at switching. Like, the drop is just death when he's dropping way back. But even when he's switching, there is just something. I feel so uncomfortable watching him in a defensive stance. It's like he's just not low enough to the floor. He's too low. It's so forced. And it just always feels like someone who's good on the ball. I think this would be a much bigger problem if Bogdan was not injured. If he was really kind of sharp and feeling it, and you just had an extra creator. I can't believe we're talking about Bogdanovich's extra creators again, but an extra creator there along with Trae, it's like one less place to hide him. You would pick him out and you would just eat him up over and over again. And the reality is, if they get beyond this, you know, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, like, I don't think Bobby Portis can be on the floor.
I think he's gonna have to play at least some minutes in that series. They just don't have enough players.
I mean, he didn't against the Nets.
He did early. He played some. That's the other reason.
First two games?
I think he played the first four, at least.
Yeah, it just, his minute load decreased as the game.
And that's why I'm not as worried about him. I mean, the Bucks coaching staff has already been very cautious with how much and exactly when Portis plays. And I distinctly remember, it was funny, in game four, the last game he played against Brooklyn, I think, it was his best defensive game of the postseason. I thought he had some big impact plays and he made a difference on that end. He checked out and never checked back in again. He started slow offensively that game. And I think it might have been more precautionary than anything. But, you know, do I think we're going to see a ton of Portis in games way, 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 going way too far ahead here? But presumptuous games 5, 6, and 7 against Phoenix? No.
But, do we know it's against Phoenix?
No. Against whoever. I mean,
I'm prepared to go on a limb and say yes.
Likely to see him against the Clippers and their personnel, quite honestly. But I don't know. I'm not as worried about it. I think it's fine.
And, you know, it's unfair because obviously this is turning into Portis and that's my fault. But like, this applies doubly so for Bryn Forbes.
I think Forbes is a bigger issue.
That's a big problem. I think they somehow managed to hide Forbes just a little bit more easily, but if they don't on any given possession, you know, cover that up, it's over. Like, Forbes is just, that's a problem too. But this is where I'd like to see them figure something out. they do need to find something, but this is where, you know, Thanasis at least gives you something defensively. One, it's fouls, but when it's not fouls, it's locked in, it's very consistent, and it's going to bother opponents. And it really is, I don't know if the offense-defense trade-off is really worth it for the Bucks in the bigger picture, in the longer term. And it is, it's fine to go game by game, and, you know, it is true that they're going to need just some bench players to offer up some relief so that, you know, the starters aren't having to play nonstop. But, like, game three and game four are colossal games. You need one of them, and really you want two of them. You want two of them, and you want to get back and get this thing done. And with that, I'm just... Bobby is, you know, if I was in the Hawks locker room, he's a guy that I'm targeting every time. Like, really going on my way to target him. And for as much as the Bucks could look to hide him, unfortunately, I think we all noticed they don't do as good a job always of protecting their guys like that as they could do.
They do with Forbes. They scram switch Portis when Forbes gets mismatched, funny enough. But if you're going to talk about someone who's gaining stature this series because Bogdan is limited offensively, that's who they're putting Forbes on. Like, mm-hmm. that was the most blatant display of, like, Bogdanovich is clearly not up to game speed at the moment. Like, they were choosing to put Tucker/Pat onto Lou Williams to hide Forbes on Bogdanovich, which I think in a usual circumstance, they would do the opposite and keep the small and the small and the bigger guy and the bigger guy. But clearly the Bucks are identifying Bogdanovich as someone who's just not going to hurt them in any way, shape, or form. And so far they've been right and it's worked. But I think Forbes has been the bigger issue. His two quick fouls felt just brutal in the second quarter. I would like to see more Portis without Forbes and vice versa, because I just think it does both of them a disservice if they're going to play together so much on defense, because obviously now you go from 1 week link to 2 week links. I think it's a lot easier to hide 1 week link, but the Bucks bench has certainly become an interesting place. And I think a lot of this again has to do with the loss of Dante DiVincenzo, but we're at a point in this postseason where everyone is down players and you can't sit around and moan too much. But if you want to talk about, you know, things Horst could have done better this season and gearing up for this playoffs, another two-way guard would have been just phenomenally nice. And we hope Teague could be the guy at times. We're not there. We're certainly not there.
He did play more minutes this game than he did last game.
He sure did. And he's going to, if the series
this may have been the Teague game. I might have to concede that this was the Teague game. 7 points, 3 of 5 shooting. That's some good work. I said, you know, he's going to come in, help win a playoff game. Here we are, the Teague game, ladies and gentlemen.
I knew it was over for Teague when even Adam was like, I didn't say they should go for the Teague game. I just thought there would be one. I was like, okay, so
we're the really point, the Teague. Point that I will stress on that is I was the person from the beginning. When the rumors came out, I was like, this isn't a good idea. I'm the person who for years, Bucks fans have wanted Teague. You know, it's a historical thing. It goes back to the offer sheet. Hawks fans will remember it just as well. I was like, this is not a good idea. But yeah, I don't want to even bring up the other name of the person who was in the mix. Everyone knows we don't need to go through all that again. But we are at a point where it's just like, yeah, just, you know, if not, yeah, sure. I'm not engaging on that one.
J.R. Smith? He was at Cops the other day.
Wow. J.R. Smith, maybe, you know?
I would love J.R. on this team, to be honest.
Do you remember? That was what a time that was when he flew in. It was all going to happen. And then, nope.
It just didn't.
The Bucks love this. The Bucks love it's imminent. And then you just never hear about it. You don't even hear a reason. It just never happens. It just fades away into dust. Rohan, pick a guy to talk about, Drew or Chris.
Let's talk about Chris. I thought he was better. He was good. He was better. I mean, you couldn't get much worse.
Yeah, better is a low bar.
Realistically, what I am enjoying seeing from Chris Middleton is just his passing is evolving in front of our eyes. We are witnessing a guy just develop an elite skill in real time, and we've seen flashes of it throughout the years, especially this season. But just he's making absurd passes. I don't think we talked enough game one about some of the passes that he was throwing around, and even throwing like in the Brooklyn series, it was just fantastic. Even today, he's not shooting the ball very well. 15 points, 6 of 13 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3, following up an 0 of 9 performance with 2 of 7. Like, my goodness. But he does have 8 assists on the night, and you can just tell that even though he's not shooting the ball well at all, he'll do that later in the series. That's just what Chris Middleton does. He's still making a positive impact on the court with his playmaking abilities.
The 6 of 13, 2 of 7 doesn't bother me.
I'm a little bothered.
There's one part of it that bothers me. It's the 13. I want to see that number up. Just it's
28 minutes, but I feel you.
For sure. But he's not... Like, part of that it does come in trying to work out a balance, and his playmaking is increasingly important game by game. Every single day, it becomes more important to the Bucks. There is just a level of control about his play that wasn't there in the past. And again, game by game, it's better and better. But the Bucks definitely need him to be upping his attempts. I mean, Drew is shooting the lights out. We'll talk about him in a moment. So him kind of being there with just one more attempt is fine at the moment. But I do think, particularly go back to the Nets series and just think of, if you're going to be in close games, the thing the Bucks want to do, the thing the Bucks need to do, is be able to look to Chris and be like, okay, this could get dicey for Giannis. This could get dicey for a lot of what we do. The ball's going in your hands. We're trusting you to create. And that is what got them to this point. You know, it wasn't always pretty. It wasn't always perfect. But that was a crucial part of what got them through the second round.
It was nice to just see him see some shots from distance go down. And that's what you needed for sure. I'm frazzled just because we had all seen, I think, the splits. Chris at home, dominant this postseason. Chris on the road, less so. Hopefully the script is just going to be flipped now, or maybe he's just going to have a few bad games in a row and then just good all the rest of the way. That would certainly work fine for me. I think we've seen, like,
that's the classic Chris Middleton experience.
I hope so. Nuclear Chris Middleton, I just think, like, the Bucks go to a different level, and it's not going to happen every game. It just can't. But when he's making everything, I think, feel like the team just feels unkillable. We haven't seen that yet. I do agree. I'm glad he kept shooting. The one thing we can't see from Chris is, like, a, you know, 8 points on 2 for 6 shots in a 28 or more minutes. Like, that's the territory you got into against the Raptors in 19, of just like, it's not working. We're just not going to shoot anymore. And it's a little more palatable with Drew on the roster, but it's still, like you said, Adam, it's not palatable. And I like your point about the playmaking being more and more important every game. There's no other point guard besides Drew. So you pretty much just have to stagger the big three, Drew, Chris, and Giannis. They have to do enough playmaking. You can't put the ball in Pat's hands. If you put the ball in Bryn's hands, he's going to take 15 steps around someone and fire off a three. Those guys have to do the playmaking. Like, there's a ton of load on these three players now, and they wore it really well in this game. They're going to have to keep wearing it well, but I love the assists. I love that he made some shots fall. I want to see a crazy Chris shooting game. I love that one of the two threes was a corner three. I feel like we very rarely see Chris shooting from the corners. I think it was Giannis who found him on a very nice pass. Would love to see more of that. I mean, I know he has to do a lot more than a 3-and-D player these days, but getting him some of those looks feels like it could help him get going a little bit more in the series and in the postseason, which all I want now is momentum that you can carry from this series to the next one, where you're definitely going to have less margin for error.
I think let him go hunting a little bit too.
I'm fine against this team. Hell yeah.
It's like you've got Trae Young or Lou Williams on the floor most of the time. Add Bogdan on one leg in there. Add Kevin Herter, who's, you know, doing a very solid job. He's going to fight. He's going to be solid, and he's going to be there.
He's worse Chris on everything is what he is, basically.
If Chris focuses in on him, like, he doesn't have the size, he doesn't have the strength, doesn't have the length to actually bother Chris.
Second leading block shots person for the Hawks this postseason, Adam. He had one tonight, at least.
I still say impressed by that.
No.
I mean, like, a little.
I mean, okay.
He has more than any Buck besides Giannis, actually. He's got a lot of blocks this postseason.
But really, like, John Collins doesn't block as many shots as he should.
Well, yeah.
Am I right on that? That's always my feeling with it.
Not defensively inclined.
So, beyond Clint Capela.
Who's also not that big, but just good at
defense. He's not big at all. He's 6'9".
Yeah.
So, I'm not impressed. This is what we've circled back around here.
That's fair.
I'm impressed, Ty.
Thank you.
It's not about Ty. I'm not the one who should be thinking. I'm impressed with Ty for bringing it up. That makes Ty feel better.
I know. Ty just looked really dejected there. So I wanted to cheer him.
But no, I agree with you, though, Adam. I do agree with you that Chris can take anyone on this roster. I mean, no one on this roster could really capably defend Chris one-on-one. Like, if it's Capela,
no one on this Hawks roster can capably guard anyone. On the Bucks, if we're keeping it 100.
I think the tweet before the series of our post-game pod was, who is going to guard anyone? And I feel like when the Bucks start bailing the Hawks out less and taking better shots throughout the course of the game, you can really see the answer is just nobody. I mean,
I said this before this series started, and I'll maintain it. The only team that can beat Milwaukee is Milwaukee in this series.
In this postseason. Or in this series.
In this series.
Oh, yeah. I think Phoenix. Yeah, okay. The fact that they keep trotting out Solomon Hill to be the quote-unquote defensive specialist, one of the sadder things I've ever seen. Like, we thought Ariza was cooked. This guy is filet mignon cooked. And they're just keep...
It's a bit of meat in the bones, though. You know? And that's,
try your best, Solomon Hill.
That's just getting them out there. That's the thing. I mean, this is one thing I do feel with the Hawks. Is like even Gallo holds up better defensively just because he's got size. It's like they need their size. They need size across the board. It's a problem when the Bucks just get to pick on smaller guys. And to their credit, they've managed to avoid that for the most part. Even tonight, it was, you know, I guess we never really got to that because the Bucks got a lot of points to transition, or then they got stopped early so that they couldn't get transition points. So it could even have been worse in some other ways. Maybe that was the idea, you know? Let's not let the Bucks see everything right now that they can do to us. But I think Solo Hill, it's like, he's a big guy. Ron and I talked about this. He's a big guy.
Thus ends the merits of Solomon Hill as a basketball player in 2021.
But he used to be big, and now he's big. And Nate McMillan has coached both versions of him, I'm pretty sure. And he's like... Yeah, I guess let's put the big guy out there.
I think I'm at the point where if I'm them, I'd just try more Okongwu. I mean, this is just like huge Ariza vibes. Like internally, he has to be like, come on, man. Like really me? I guess not. I mean,
I hope not. I hope he has more self-respect than that.
For his credit, I think he's done better than I expected on that end, which is to say like not just awful. He survived. But I survived enough. Yeah, I think he was like -3 in this game.
Yeah,
which is pretty good for the rest of the Hawks.
Only one foul.
Yeah, it's interesting. But
I'm still not over him turning on the afterburners to get by Drew in game one, you know?
Well, Drew just didn't expect that.
Yeah, Drew was like, wait, what? Like, was I covering someone else? I didn't think. Like, did I get confused?
Was that Lou Will?
See, you look at him and you're like, that's a big, you know, who's this big coming up on me? And then he moves and you're like, no, he used to be a wing. He used to play a bit of the two.
Way back when. Drew Holiday. So we talked about before the series, the X factor, right? Like he's going to get a lot of the Trey assignment. And then on the other end, you know, there's not good options for Chris. There's one solid option for Giannis and Capela. The Hawks have never had anyone for Drew. There's no one on the roster who, even when fully healthy, I mean, maybe one of Reddish or Hunter, I guess, but Hunter's out and Reddish returned and played spot minutes. He's been out for months, actually. But no one is a good matchup for Drew Holiday on defense on this Hawks team, especially so. I mean, again.
Closest Drew, they probably have is Chris Dunn, right? That could maybe do anything.
Oh, my God. I forgot that. He's not even. Chris Dunn played a little. Oh, is he all garbage time?
Garbage time. Yeah. I do find it incredible that Lou Williams is out there. Like, Lou Williams is washed up. He's not giving you anything offensively. You know, maybe we shouldn't share it. You keep doing
He played well against Philly.
He had one really good game, I think, is what happened.
He brought them back.
He won them a game. He did
against Philly, though.
Against a bad team.
That version of Philly in particular.
What version of Philly has been? Oh, when they had Jimmy Butler, a proven playoff performer. My bad, Adam. Sorry about that. Forgot what I was talking about. I got caught up in the slander. Drew Holiday, though.
Who are you slandering? That was like you're slandering me. What is going on?
Philly. I'm saying they have no playoff performers left after they picked Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler, which is as hilarious as it sounds. But they have no one outside of Chris Dunn, who I don't think McMillan is going to dust off in non-garbage time anytime soon, to guard Drew Holiday. And credit to him. Horrible Nets series. Two redeeming minutes, basically the whole series. He's had two redeeming games so far. He's one of the best Bucks players in the first game. I'd say again, probably only second to Giannis, one of the best players in this game. 22 points, 9 for 14 from the field, 3 for 4 from deep. I like that 10 of his shots were from 2 and only 4 from deep. 1 for 3 from free throw. He missed 2 of 2 at one point, which happens weirdly often with Drew for someone whose free throw percentage is not abnormally low. But 7 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. The plus minuses are great. The whole starting lineup is plus 30 or better. Ironically, Giannis with the lowest. But he dominated. He kept getting inside. He kept passing out. I think the Bucks playing inside out is the key to just dominating the series. He just did it. I don't even have that many notes. I just thought he was great. He did exactly what we wanted to see all game long. The fact that he looked so comfortable now. Like, even if there's one of the quote-unquote bigs who's not Capella between him and the rim, he just doesn't care anymore. I think early in game one, he was passing out of some times when he penetrated he shouldn't have. Now, if he sees John Collins back there, he's just like, this is still 2 points for me. He's not going to do anything about it. And lo and behold, John Collins did not do anything about it this whole game.
John Collins is like playing slam ball out there. You know? That he would be unbelievable, you know, if that ever takes off. He would be incredible.
If they add that to the Olympics next, now that 3-on-3 is in there, John Collins, get ready to rep Team USA.
I am concerned about the books.
Who's on the USA 3v3 team? How is it not like KD, Chris Middleton?
Because they're
like,
on the real team.
But why can't they also do the 3v3?
That's quite the combination you came up with there, too. KD, Chris Middleton, and Tatum.
That's a good combo.
That's a lot of length.
I don't know if I was just picking three guys. I don't know if Jason Tatum would come into it.
I'm not sure if most people outside of Wisconsin and a very small part of Ireland would put Middleton in there either.
That is also kind of a given. But Jason Tatum's a home on the couch is pretty part of it. What were we saying? I don't know. I can't remember.
John Collins.
Yeah, John Collins, slam ball.
I'm a little concerned that if there's a close game in this series, the Bucks are going to get done on one of those late in the game. They're not going to box out and he's going to come in.
That happened. That was game one.
But I mean, in a more painful, like, this is the one. It wasn't in over the top to finish.
Oh, okay. I just thought you meant offensive.
It could be at the buzzer, you know, kind of. A DeAndre Ayton kind of moment, except it's just John Collins coming flying in over the back of a couple of, or over the top of a couple of Bucks defenders to clean up. It's just they're not getting that. And if you could just kind of figure that out and make sure you're boxing it out, you're nullifying a lot of the threat right now.
Yeah. You mentioned the Hawks winning a game at the buzzer. One question I wanted to pose to you guys while we're here. Is this going to turn into the 19 Celtics series all over again? I know the comparisons have been made, especially right after the loss. I think some of the bigger Bucks optimists were invoking that very series. Do you think there's some similarities? Kind of just an all-out rush game one from the visiting team. You see some answers game two, and I'm not sure how many answers the Hawks are going to have for the Bucks answers in this game. I don't know if I'm that confident right now, but it is hard to say that Milwaukee's not certainly in the driver's seat despite not having home court anymore.
Ty, you picked Bucks in 5.
So?
As did I, but I wasn't expecting to lose game one.
I didn't pick that specific order, that's for sure.
You know, it was the gentleman's handout in game four was what I was originally saying. Yeah,
when you pick Bucks in five, you assume it's three or four.
I mean, I think my answer to that is I want to see game three.
Whoa, you know, oh, bold.
That's a Jordan answer. Yeah, right
the spirit of Jordan Tresky.
How dare you? No, it's not Jordan. I'm not sitting on the fence. I was going to say,
wow.
No, well, Jordan will understand. I've spent years trying to get answers out of Jordan. So, you know, I do not take kindly to be called Jordan with any prediction I make. I want to see game three. I want to see, can they get anything close to what they showed in this game to begin with? Like, if at halftime they've got a 10-point lead and they've done it, series is over. Series is over. They win in five. But I just don't have a feel for how any of it's going to play out. What's it going to be like in Atlanta for a conference finals game? You know,
they're going to have one of their biggest people being a Bucks fan in Gucci. Shout out to Gucci.
Might swing the series.
They've got a lot of people to go around. I don't think they're going to be too worried.
But the Bucks need it though. Need is a strong word. It would be nice for Bucks Twitter if Gucci.
I nearly said, is Shania Twain going to be going to Atlanta? I still can't get past this.
What? Just a weird experience. Absolutely wild.
We're doing a bit. I mean, it's Sheryl Crow. We know
it is, yes, Sheryl Crow. Yes. But then I was like, is Rohan actually confused well? No, is this? No. Did you both? I hope I really should be saving this for Jordan because this is where he goes to work. But did you watch the video pregame where Zora Stevenson interviewed her? Did the books put out?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay. Well, then we need to save for another time. It is incredible.
Be a whole nother podcast.
It is incredible. Jordan, there'll be a full episode of Win and Six about it.
Yeah, I'll be eagerly anticipating that.
I'm not even joking. We might just do a full episode where we just line by line break down. Like her analysis. Big Bobby Portis fan.
Oh, see? Oh, Dad, and you argued against Portis.
She said something like she doesn't think she'll be able to sing First Cut is the Deepest ever again without thinking of Bobby Portis.
Wow. don't spoil anymore.
No, if anyone hasn't, the books tweeted it out. Go check it out. It's something.
And then tune back into this feed sometime in the future for the full breakdown. You can do like clip by clip, line by line. I can't wait for this. Rohan, I'm going to make you go last. I think this is going to be 19 Celtics vibes. I just think...
I thought you said a second ago that you didn't.
I said I wasn't sure. I was still thinking about it.
You've come around on it pretty quick.
I have.
I even said, like, Ty, you pick Bucks in five. Why are you going against that? Now you're back.
I know.
That was a quick 20 seconds.
The Ty Windish experience. I have a weird analogy to go with it.
Cool.
That's not what I meant, Rohan. Like, do you ever have that moment when you realize you're taller than your dad and things are just different? Things are just different from then. Like, you're taller now. I think it's a lot of people have this with, like, brothers, like when you're taller than the brother. I don't know. I didn't have any brothers, so I don't get that.
But no,
like,
me neither. But I've got that sort.
Like, you just realize things are different, and I think that's where the Bucks are at in this series. It's like, oh, there's things we can do that, like, there's just no answer for. And I think when you get there in a series – again, unless there's some sort of an answer, usually the series is kind of cooked from there. Like many years ago now, I'm old, but when the Warriors realized they could just like put Bogut on Tony Allen and ignore Tony Allen, that series was over. There was nothing the Grizzlies could do. And that was that. And Conley got injured. Grizzlies fans will be mad, the four that are listening to this. But the big adjustment happened. There was no counterpunch and the series ended. A more prescient example, Kawhi on Giannis. I think there probably was a counterpunch, but the Bucks couldn't figure it out. But things changed. The series was over. I think the Bucks realizing that they can just go inside as much as they want and show this help to Trae Young, and as long as they don't foul him or basically let him throw lobs all day, that Atlanta's just not going to have that much offense. I just think there's realizations that have happened in this game that are proven throughout three quarters of basketball that are going to be really hard for the Hawks to gain ground against because they are at a talent disadvantage. And I just think that there's not that many counterpunches left. So maybe it's six. Maybe they take one more of the games. Maybe it's not exactly the Celtics series. But I do think the vibes are there. And just that the Bucks figured some things out. And I don't know exactly what Atlanta can do. And I'm going to, this is where I'm falling victim to Adam's quote tweet, but I'm going to trust the Bucks enough to hope they at least stick with some of these things for more than three quarters.
Okay, you've heard it here first. Hawks take game three, everyone.
But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you, Ty, there. Like, they pushed the right buttons. Atlanta already exercised all of their options. This is the series is over already. I think it is.
It's not over.
No, I'd really uncomfortable
that. After Adam, okay, I'll hedge that. I'll say I agree with you there. After one half of game three and they're up 10 points, I agree. It's over.
The only thing I think what's fair
to say doing,
is...
You have to see what they're doing. If they're doing the same things that they did tonight, they're doing the same things. They're making the right plays. They're adjusting correctly. Then it's good.
Do we believe that'll happen?
Just go back to game... I think it can.
I actually do.
I don't. That's, I'm still skeptical. I need to see the books put in consistently. You go, oh, okay, they've got four in a row. Because even, you know, this is the story. They're playing a team like the Nets. So we all can excuse that much more readily. But it's been a while. You know, we're going back to that first round. Feels a long time ago now. But it's been a while since we've just seen them kind of, okay, one game after next, after next, after next. And that's the thing. I'm not expecting some kind of big response, some answer that the Bucks can't come up with their own response to, in terms of something the Hawks are going to bring to the table. The series is not about the Hawks. Sorry, Hawks fans. I don't mean that to be disrespectful. Hasn't been from the beginning, though, for me. This series is about the Bucks, and it's about how much the Bucks are going to allow the Hawks into it. Right from the jump, they allow them into it. Until we see that fully reverse and until we see them pull away, you've got to think it's a series. And the Hawks and what they have up until this game was the complete opposite. But through their playoff run, they've proven they'll hang around and they'll fight. They're the kind of team that, you know, the Bucks, if they just don't kill them off and they end up in some close games, we're going to have some nightmare finishes and they could lose some games. So that's where I'm at on it. It's not about, you know, oh, the Hawks are going to do this. It's really, what are the Bucks going to do themselves? That's what still scares me.
The one, I do think it's just like, if Chris doesn't have the worst game in game one, it's a 2-0 series. So even with the Bucks not pulling the right levers early and Trey having a fantastic game and all the offensive rebounds and everything else, like, still such a close Hawks win. I just think the series isn't over, but the Bucks are like, they're in such a good position to make it over within a game or two that I just think it's going to be Bucks 5 or 6. Outside chance at 6. I think Bucks in 5 is very, very
good. The Bucks just aren't winning in 6. Yeah, it's just not going
to
happen.
Not allowed to.
Yeah, we're probably going to 7 if it's not 5.
Oh, God. I don't have it in me. I have a random question. I think this will probably be our last thing. Is this by far the best postseason coaching job we've seen from Bud while he's been with the Bucks?
Unequivocally.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy, right? I mean,
yeah,
certainly not perfect. There's certainly things we've all cited that could be much better, but...
Do you mean just the entirety of this postseason?
Whole postseason.
I mean, there's not a lot of competition because it definitely wasn't last year.
Last year was the worst, I think, actually.
It's really between the two conference finals runs.
Yeah.
I think it might be closer than we think.
I think it's this one because what levers were ever pulled in 19? Like not playing Mirotić, I guess. Like, I don't think that much else.
Like, to their credit, like we talked about it on Binge the Bucks. I hate that so much. They did mess with their defense a bit. We chronicled that awful series. But yeah, they did, when they needed to do something and absolutely had no other options, then they changed things a
but I don't
little
think it
bit.
Was materially, yeah. It was very.
Little. They did. They changed their coverages, they changed assignments, and changed their scheme a little bit, but nothing to the degree of what we've seen this postseason.
I also think that was the first run. Sure. And I think it's more kind of natural for anyone, not even someone like Bud, who might kind of be inclined towards this anyway, to just continue trusting what you're doing the first time round and considering just how spectacular their regular season was, the whole turnaround. I don't know. if things continue to track as they are, well, obviously it's not up for debate then, you know, because really the results are what's going to outrank anything here. But I think it's closer. It's maybe closer than we think, but just finding enough, like he was far from a perfect series against the Nets, but there were good decisions there that ultimately helped the Bucks over the line against the Nets. And against the Hawks, yeah, some really bad stuff to lost you game one, but the adjustments that needed to be there were there from right out of the gate in game two, and they made a difference.
I think it's much better just because we're just, he's much more, and it sounds funny because still much less so than probably any coach, maybe with the exception of McMillan, left in the postseason, but just much more willing and able, and willing is, he's always been able, obviously, but much more willing to be malleable and just try. I mean, I thought the Bucks started game one more divergent in their base defense than we would have ever seen in 2019 or in 2020. Like, I just think we're seeing some things from the jump. Still, we're seeing some adjustments come slower than we would like, but we're still seeing them. And I think even one that doesn't work, and this kind of plays in your hand of saying it's closer, Adam, but like, we would have never seen Portis and Giannis, or mostly Giannis, playing at five for a whole quarter before. Like, that was an adjustment. That one didn't, I mean, it actually looked like it was going to work until they just couldn't rebound in the last few minutes. But that was the kind of thing we're just not, we haven't seen before. So I do think,
for sure,
I think part of that comes from the roster. I think we're seeing players that are calling for some of these things, sometimes publicly in press conferences more than before. But I think some of that too is, like you said, Bud getting more comfortable and just learning some things from these past postseasons. I agree, something you said in the game one pod, certainly not stupid, certainly doesn't not know coaching, but I think just a very rigid person. We're seeing he's less rigid now, and I think it's a good thing for the Bucks, even if that's going to result in some wrong calls too, but you just have to live with that.
So yeah, it's definitely this season.
I think it's fairly easy just because I think this is a more postseason ready coaching performance.
I feel like I'm being ganged up on here.
I don't think you can win in the playoffs if your mantra is like,
no, look, that's true. Just the baseline is different this year. So
yeah,
it's hard to kind of look at them in a relative sense because there is more variety in the Bucks offense and their defense this year because of what's gone before. So yeah. I think it's tough to kind of just be like, apples to apples comparison, because they are quite different things. But look, I've no problems. If we want to call this his best postseason, that sounds good to me, and we'll likely lead up to good things from here.
It's got to be his best ever. I've heard similar things where issues in Atlanta. I don't care all that
God.
Much.
I mean,
they were never going to beat the Cavs, but
they were never going to beat the Cavs, but they sure lost in the ugliest possible ways to the Cavs.
Yeah.
People can change. Who would have thought?
Let's get one peak, Bud. Let's go. Peak everyone. Change the narrative. Get the ship. It's been 50 years. Somebody said.
And they're the most recent. They would be the most recent champ out of the remaining four teams.
Yeah. So the only one who's gotten one before. But yeah.
Well, in their current city. In their current city.
Oh, is the Hawks in Milwaukee?
No, St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, well.
Okay. You tried to, Adam was so happy when you said this is going to be the last question. Adam, give me a score prediction for game three.
Oh, Jesus.
Everyone's least favorite thing.
Yeah, he does it every time still. Do you make note of these predictions?
Yes.
You do?
In my head.
How close was I? Because I think I was really close.
You said 120-109, I believe.
I thought it was 99. But anyway,
it might have been 99 then. Oh, it was. See? No, it was 98. It was 120-98.
Okay, that sounds right. Which was sort of vaguely close.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Okay. Ty. Wait, who's 108?
It's the Bucks.
Okay.
Bucks 125, Hawks 110. I don't think Atlanta's going to stop Milwaukee from scoring anymore. Oh, they scored 127, 110. I won't do 125 twice in a row.
Don't bring up the 86 from the Brooklyn series that they scored like twice in a row or three times in a row.
I was on to something there. Maybe.
I'm going to say Milwaukee 130, Atlanta 110. I don't think it's going to be close. realistically.
127-113. No, 103. I don't know. It doesn't, who cares?
Not me.
No one's gonna track these. All right, the last thing.
Yes.
5-star Apple reviews. It's just a quick review, Adam. But
yeah, okay.
I'm gonna keep reading them. We appreciate the people. I don't want to say this like I don't mean it. We appreciate people who leave these 5-star reviews.
I appreciate it. This is good. I'm all for this.
A good diversion. It really does help out all of us here on Eurostep and Win in Six, the Eurostep Podcast Network, if you leave these reviews on the Apple feed. So Hess Weekend says, the best. It's just the subject line is the best, which is a great start. The realist around podcasting about the Bucks. Great insight, great people, nothing but good things to say. ! 5 stars. It's a great review, Hess Weekend. Appreciate the love. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. It means a lot. Like, Ty, you had a tweet today asking people to reply with like what they enjoy about the Eurostep Podcast Network. And it's so nice to see all of this. It's like, I'm speaking genuinely here. Like it's very nice. It's very heartwarming to see that you guys enjoy this content a lot, and it means a lot. It pushes us to make good content for all of you out there. It makes us feel better. We want to make the best content for you possible. And it's very, very heartwarming to see that we're striving towards that goal.
And particularly, may I add, since we have come together and formed a super team, the response has been incredible.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of whether it's a nice tweet or it's a review or whatever it might be, or, you know, just straight listens and downloads, it's a big deal, and it's a big, big jump for all parties involved. So we're very much appreciative. We're glad people are getting on board and enjoying the fun of the Bucks playoff run and making sure that they're checking in with us for that journey from game to game throughout the playoffs. We're having a lot of fun doing it, and we're very, very appreciative of all you taking the time for this.
And the content's not going to stop no matter what. Like, off season, regular season,
no matter what, if the world ends,
we've got 5,500 episodes pre-recorded. We got AI involved. AI Jordan is terrific. They're gonna keep happening. Nothing.
I'm just checking. I need to sleep sometime.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, if you want the level of commitment that we have, just ask Adam's sleep patterns, his circadian rhythms.
It's not good.
Doing it for you guys. I've sacrificed my mental sanity, which you guys seem to enjoy, which also, like, I mean, like, I'm glad you're enjoying, but also, like, come on. You know what? No, whatever. I'll do what I can do to provide content here. But yeah, that's a great place to wrap this up and say thank you for listening to this episode of the Eurostep Podcast Network. Eurostep Win in 6 post game 2 collab. The Milwaukee Bucks absolutely rolling the Atlanta Hawks. If you want to keep up the good vibes that we were just talking about, make sure you are subscribed on your podcast platform of choice and leave a 5-star review, because you can get it read out here on the next episode. That'll be great. It just makes everyone feel better. So make sure you're leaving that 5-star review on Apple. Give a nice comment. Maybe we'll shout you out on the next episode. Other than that, make sure you check out all of the great content across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Stay safe, everyone. Go Bucks. I just hit my keyboard. And we'll talk to you next time. Whatever. It's done.